Today's program has been brought to you by Route 11 Potato Chips. Made with a secret recipe and superior ingredients, their mission is to make an outstanding product in a safe and clean environment. For more information, visit www.rt11.com.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more. Hello, Planet Earth. Welcome to
Forget About It
on HeritageRadioNetwork.org. My name is Chris Kuzmi, and Mary's taking a drink.
And I'm Mary Izette. And we're your hosts for this journey in all things fermentable every Monday night live at 7 p.m. on Heritage Radio Network, archived on the station's website as well as on iTunes.
That's right. Very, very, very excited about today's episode. But before we do that, Mary has a couple announcements.
All right, first off, Tuesday is Coosday.
Oh, yeah.
At 508 Gasser Brewery. So, as some of you might know, Chris Kuzme is the head brewer at 508 Gasser Brewery in West Soho. And he has a very special, two very special beer releases tomorrow night. The first is the first in a series of homebrewer collaborations with Benjamin and Danielle from Brooklyn Homebrew. So what is that beer called?
That beer is called Grano Americano. It's an American wheat, about 4.6% alcohol, and it's a very hoppy, lovely, lovely drinking ale.
Perfect summer beer.
That's right.
And a dollar from every pint. Yes, every sale of a full price pint will go towards their charity choice,
which is Art Start. And Art Start helps underprivileged kids through art and painting and music and things of the like.
Cultural activity.
Yes, it's awesome.
And then the second beer is the most recent in his Brolaboration series, brewed with Jim Barnes from the Shelton Brothers, and that's called From Here to Eternity. I actually had that the other night. It's lovely. It's kind of a bearded guard slash blonde kind of thing.
Yes, I like brolaborations, but I like to announce it. I finally made a galaboration the other day with Jen Schwartz.
Wait, what? Oh, I'm not a gal?
Well, pillow talk is a little different. But Mary's about to also talk about the upcoming homebrew competition at Bitter Nesters.
Yep, so that is going to be on June 22nd. It looks like they are still taking participants. So that's going to be Saturday, June 22nd from noon to 4 at the Green Building at 452 Union Street. I believe that's in the Gowanus area. There's going to be 20 different homebrews. It's a public event. And you can go to their website, which is bitterandesters.com, and click on their Brooklyn, B-R-E-W-K-L-Y-N, Homebrewers Contest and Brooklyn Festival. If you would like to enter, it's going to be a lottery system, and you'll have to provide 5 gallons of beer on June 22nd, but it sounds like a lot of fun. The other thing that's coming up is June 14th and 15th is an exciting weekend. So Savor, which is a premier beer and food pairing festival that's put on by the Brewers Association, is coming to New York City this year. It's going to be in Chelsea in the Altman Building and Metropolitan Pavilion, which is on West 17th Street, correct? Between 6th and 7th?
Yes.
17th or 18th. Anyway, 18th, just right actually. There in Chelsea.
135 18th Street.
This is an amazing event. So Chris and I went the first year that Savor was in D.C., and then we went last year. And all right, we'll be honest. Tickets are a little pricey. They're, what, one?
I think they're 170 here.
170. But don't, so, you know, a lot of people will be like, oh my God, is that crazy? But this is an absolutely amazing event. First of all, there's incredible beer poured from all over the country. The pairings sound amazing. And you get a chance to meet the brewers. So if you're a big Dogfish Head fan, Sam Colugione is going to be behind the Dogfish Head table.
All the owners come for it.
It's just the feeling of community and the beer and the food is absolutely incredible. I mean, people, they pull out all the stops for this thing. So Google Savor and get your tickets now. You can also get a ticket package that has a salon, which is kind of an educational tasting. Those look amazing as well. Chris and I will be there on Friday night, and we're really looking forward to it.
Right.
On the same day, actually on that Saturday of June 15th, Brooklyn Kitchen here in Williamsburg is going to be having their first brouhaha. So they're going to have a homebrew salon. They're going to have tastings. You're welcome to bring your homebrew and share it and get feedback from the people that work there. They're going to be pouring some of their homebrew. They're also going to have discounts on all homebrew supplies if you go. So it sounds like a lot of fun. I think they're going to have some snacks and stuff like that. So I would recommend doing that. That looks like it's going to launch at noon on June 15th.
I love food and beer. You know what? Food and beer is awesome.
Which brings us to our guests.
That's right. Haley Jensen and Stephen Durley, how are you?
We're great.
Awesome.
So I'm going to start talking about you guys for a second. I first met you, Haley, during the first time I was involved with the New York City Craft Beer Week. And with Josh Schaffner, we came in with the homebrew chef to DBGB's where you were, and you just talked up, you gave us an incredible experience, and you know a shit ton about beer, and just awesome from the bat. What is your background? What's your story?
Well, you mentioned DBGB. That was where I got my title, beer sommelier. So I was there for about 2 years running the beer program there. It was a great start because it's so beer and food focused. So even though I was doing the beer, I got to really work with Chef Danielle Balud and to incorporate beer into our food and just to give people the experience that you had that night, which
yeah.
I guess you liked.
Oh, it was awesome. Yeah.
So that was kind of my intro. And then 2 years ago, I left to open Taproom 307, which is a beer bar at 23rd and 3rd in Gramercy. It's more of a bar, but we still definitely have great food, which is, you know, where Steven is as well. He's our chef.
Yes, I'm the chef.
I'm sure I'll want to tell a little more about it. But yeah, so that's just been my experience in the city, and it's all been beer focused and trying lots of great beers and giving them to the people I serve. So
I'm fairly certain that it's because of you that I know Steven. How did you guys meet?
Well, I moved to the city to work for Danielle Ballou, and they had me open DBGB, and that's when I developed a big crush on a certain server that started there.
Yeah. Oh my God, who?
And we
does Haley know about this?
And we've just bonded. The first time we really talked, we had a nice little conversation about beer, and the next day she comes in, and she has like 3 bottles of beer, and she's like, I think you'd like all 3 of these. And I was like, what? You bought me beer? That's great.
Yeah. And love at first sip.
Yes, indeed.
And now we're wed, and you guys just made your 100th baby the other day.
Yes, we did.
Right?
Yeah, we actually...
So your 100th homebrew, did you guys start homebrewing together?
We did. It was 1 year for his birthday. I got everybody to do almost like a Kickstarter pre-Kickstarter. It was like a donate money so that I could get him a homebrew kit.
Nice.
Because I knew that's what he really wanted. And we had been talking about brewing because we were both such beer lovers. But I raised the money with our friends and people at the restaurant, and we pitched in and got him a kit. So that's been about 3 years ago.
Yeah. And we did... we did extract brewing for the first 5 beers, and then we went all grain on number 6, and then 95 beers after that. We just did our 100th batch.
That is awesome. What was your 100th batch? And what was your first brew?
Our very first brew was a Belgian strong dark, which coincidentally, 2 years later, we ended up winning NHC in the Belgian Strong Ale category for our Belgian Dark Strong.
Yeah, our first beer was a good one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
It wasn't the same batch, obviously, that won, but it was definitely kind of cool that we started on a high note. You know, we ended up rebrewing it and changing it and switching to all grain, but it kind of took us to Nationals, and we got a gold for it. So.
Yeah.
Now, I got to say, mind you, this is in their Alphabet City apartment, which is not, you know, it's not, you're not living in a 2,000-square-foot suburban house.
No,
you're,
we have, you know, anyone that says, oh, I have way too small of an apartment to brew is lying to themselves. Because we started, and I actually had shared the apartment with a roommate, and I was in the small room, and we would brew, and we'd put the carboys, like, basically along the wall. And there was just enough room to kind of walk into the room and either like sit on the computer chair or lay down on the bed. And then all the bottles we'd put under the bed. And so we had a little like cramped operation going for a while. Yeah. But eventually Haley moved in and we moved to the big room and we turned like basically my old bedroom into our brewery.
Yeah. But your brewing, I mean, your kitchen is still pretty small. Oh, I mean, yeah, you have everything you need there, but it's a little kind of hallway situation.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you know, that's one thing I have to give you guys credit for is that you're brewing up a storm. I mean, you guys always have some very interesting and amazing beers going, and you're doing this in a small apartment.
Yeah, and we actually, brew number 100th was our smallest in gravity, but our largest in batch size. We brewed 16 gallons. Yeah.
Did you brew it? How did you do that?
All four burners, all huge pots. Yeah.
at a tap room, I managed to take home a giant stainless steel pot. Awesome.
Sorry, guys.
Yes.
Like a 20-gallon pot, and we put it on, and it covers all four burners, so we just crank them all, and the amount of heat going into the apartment with the steam is pretty intense. But
not to mention that tiny apartment was cramped with about 20 people that night as well. Yeah.
Celebrating your 100th brew.
Yeah.
Do you want to tell them about Brew
100? I had the idea for this beer. I've been really into session sours. I think they're just super fun because they're low alcohol. A lot of times, you know, they'll be like fruity and light, very dry, crisp, and it's just such a fun style. So I wanted to brew one, but we got the idea to brew a really big batch and then split it into three carboys that we're going to do, one with white cherries, one with raspberries, and one with blackberries. And then we're going to blend, so we'll have a blended version, and then we'll have the separate fruits as well. So I just thought it'd be really fun. We called it pocket ale because it's tiny enough to fit in your pocket. That was my idea.
Awesome.
Yeah.
But it came to me and I was like, that's just what I'm into and what I feel like drinking. And
so you guys said it's about 2.8% or will
yeah.
be?
It's going to start 2.8, but then when we add the fruit, it's the sugars are going to bring it up a little.
What's your yeast bacteria?
So we for primary, we pitched lactobacillus and then two strains of Brett, the lambicus and the...
Bruxellinus,
yeah.
Those went in all three carboys.
Yeah, mm-hmm. So we split it, and actually we aerated with pure O2. It actually took about 48 hours, maybe a little longer, to really take off. So, you know, those yeasts are a lot slower starting.
Yeah.
But, you know, I thought it would be a regular fermentation because it was such a low gravity. I didn't think they would really need that much time. But they took a little longer, but hopefully we get some funkier characters out of the stress fermentation.
Yeah. Well, I've heard, I mean, the lag time when you do primary bread is pretty lengthy, so.
Yeah, yeah.
Or it can be.
Awesome. The temperature that you pitched at, you were telling me earlier, you started.
Yeah, 68? So we started, we basically have a temperature control little brew room.
Yeah, his former bedroom has an AC pumping.
We keep it at 68 degrees. And so we kept it there. We pitched it. We kept it there for about 12 hours. And then I was like, you know, we should probably pull it out into the living room. And our apartment is hot and we're going through, you know, a heat wave right now. So our apartment can get anywhere from 75 to 80 degrees. So it definitely had time to come up from 68. And it's probably like at 75 right now.
And you're still leaving it in your room?
Yeah, we're going to leave it
in
there
till
probably primary is finished.
Cool.
And then hopefully by the end of the month, some of the nicer berries will be coming out of the farmers markets. We'll be able to get some nice berries and throw them in there. And I don't know how long. I've heard that when you add fruit, and we've done this in the past, you can wait till the fruit drops. Mm-hmm. And that's basically when the sugars ferment, the density, you know, changes and they drop to the bottom. So we don't know how long it's going to take, but we're going to throw them in there and wait till they drop.
Awesome.
We'll let you know.
What are some of your highlights of the 100 batches that you've done? Yeah.
What are some of your favorites from the past? Well, I have to say, first of all, that you guys, so when so Chris and I went to their wedding, and you guys served your homebrewed cider at your wedding instead of champagne.
Yes.
It was absolutely delicious. I've had several other of your ciders, award-winning ciders, which we'll talk about in a minute, but I thought that was absolutely beautiful.
Yeah, and Haley managed to get a 9-liter bottle.
Yeah,
takes a regular kind of Belgian cork, you know,
but it's not.
And so we've held on to it. Awesome. We've put maybe 6 or 7 batches of homebrew in it, and
it's always a big celebration when we open one because it's a lot of beer in that. So
yeah,
you got to throw a party.
Yeah, it's definitely a party bottle. but yeah, we put the cider in there and decided our first batch of cider. We decided to hang on to it and pour it as like a champagne for the wedding. A, because it's, you know, very nicely carbonated and it's bone dry. So it has some champagne-like qualities.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And B, you know, we brewed it with Haley's family, so it was kind of
Really cool. My sister moved into a house coincidentally. The owner who built the house had a small orchard on his property, and he was known as a cider king of the area. So they asked us if we wanted to come up and kind of help them get started because they didn't really know a lot about cider making.
But this orchard was about 100 years ago.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's quite an old orchard. Their house actually has a cider cellar apart from their basement.
Wow. The cidery is long gone, but... The apples are still there,
so they wanted us to help them out, and we did. And a local farmer had a dairy farmer had a press, a wine press from 1864 that we actually crushed apples. So it's pretty rustic. It's about as farmhouse as you get.
Awesome.
And it was just so fun experimenting with it, and then to get to serve it at our wedding was like a really big highlight.
Yeah.
I agree. And on that note, we're going to take a break. We'll be right back with more from Haley and Steven shortly.
The following program has been brought to you by Route 11 Potato Chips. From the moment Route 11 Potato Chips dropped their first batch of chips back in the early days of 1992, they understood their destiny as a high-quality producer. Instead of succumbing to the frenzy of mass production, they took advantage of their small size and made chipping a personal art form. The payoff was immediate, an incredible potato chip. With a secret recipe and superior ingredients, their mission is to make an outstanding product in a safe and clean environment. In this world of uncertainty that we live in, Route 11 Potato Chips believes comfort food should be just that. Know where your food comes from. For more information, visit RT11.com.
Hey, welcome back to Ferment About It, HeritageRadioNetwork.org. Mary's got a question about cider.
So I judge ciders at our homebrew rally, which is the New York City homebrew competition, and you guys had which I didn't know was your cider, but you had an amazing English ale cider, or English style cider that was incredible.
We had two.
Thank you.
We entered two separate batches. One was the very first batch we did, and then the other one was closer to the end, the eighth batch, I believe. But they got first and second, so we were really happy.
That's awesome.
And then the one that won got second place best in show.
Yeah, it was delicious. So talk a little bit about that, because you had some malolactic fermentation. So we've had a cider show, but we haven't talked about traditional English cider. So what is a traditional English cider, I guess?
So English cider is a cider that's usually fermented fairly dry, and then lactic bacteria and secondary will give it kind of a smoky, bacony quality.
And that's not a requirement, but it's...
Yeah.
When it happens, it's pretty cool.
As long as it happens, And I think that's tricky to get just the right amount of that and not have it take over in flavor. Because that cider was sitting around for a while, right?
Yeah, mm-hmm. And actually you judged it the year previous, and you actually said in your notes maybe it got a little strong in the malolactic because the smoky bacon was a little too much. But 1 year later, I think it mellowed out even more.
Calling you out.
So did you guys, what did you do to get that?
So we did, actually the first few batches we actually fermented, with Brett Lambicus. And then I think after batch number three, we switched over to the Y yeast, cider, yeast. But basically, you know, ciders, when we started brewing ciders, we found that they're a little trickier than, you know, beer, in the sense that all the sugars in the cider are one sugar. So the yeast really wants to ferment it bone dry in most cases. So, you know, most of the ciders that we're used to tasting, the commercial examples, they're all pretty sweet. And it's actually harder to brew, like a home brew, a sweeter cider than it is to brew a bone dry cider. But
you have to figure out how to stop it.
Yeah, right. You have to arrest the fermentation. Now, you can do that several different ways, pasteurization, or you can, you know, filter it and then back sweeten it. For us, we prefer dry ciders, and we like the English style so much. She lived in England for a little while.
Yeah, it's real rustic and like farmhousey, and we really wanted to go for something a little more along those lines.
Yeah, so it basically fermented to zero, and then we racked into secondary, and we added lactobacillus to give it that lactic fermentation, and let it go for about 3 months in secondary before bottling.
Now, did you add any additional salt? You just added the lactobacillus as it was, nothing else?
Yeah, okay. I'd pitched about half a vial per 5 gallon carboy.
Let it go. And then how old was it? So when I judged it at Homebrew Alley this year, how old was that cider?
So we bottled, you know, we had several kind of batches, but it was all kind of made in 2011, in the fall of 2011. And so stuff got bottled in the fall, in the winter, you know, maybe January, February in 2012. So it first went to competition in 2012 when it was very young. And we felt it was really harsh then. It had some, like, very, almost like very tart, like, harsh notes to it. It was very tannic. And then when it went back to competition a year later, it was about, you know, a year and a half old. And we really feel like it's peaking now.
Yeah, cool.
I love that.
Okay, Chris, you can ask.
Oh, hey. So we had a potato chip commercial. I'm not sure if that translates to the archive version, but you are an incredible chef. I'm a fan from way back and continuously and perpetually.
Oh, thank you.
Thank you for doing what you do. But you made a beer out of potato stuff. A lot of people don't know that you can do that. Please tell us about your potato beer.
Yeah, we actually, it was Haley's idea. We were
brewing a barley wine.
Yeah, we were talking about how, and one of the things that we do that's a little different that we learned from our friend, Johnny Leroy Compton III, is basically you over sparge a little bit, and you can even throw a few grains or stuff into the sparge, basically. So when you're done sparging with your beer, you just move the hose into a separate pot, and then we get a little low gravity kind of extra extraction, and usually, you know, you're going to get some tannins in there.
Yeah, it's a little too harsh.
Which is why most people wouldn't do that. But if you make a sour out of it, then you can do that because the tannins will, you know, eventually age. So originally we brewed a barley wine, so we had all this grain. And I was talking to Haley about, we should add some extra starches, you know. And, you know, what kind of stuff do you want to use? And she's like, let's do potatoes.
We see it so often in spirits, but it's not a traditional brewing.
Right.
Obviously, it's not traditional. But I just thought, you know, let's try and see what happens. And, I mean, it really didn't give us, it's not like it was as efficient as grain, but it gave it a few more points. And it actually, the cool thing about it was it took on this peach aroma that I've never encountered before. And I was like, wow, I guess potatoes end up tasting like peaches.
Potato peach.
Yeah, subsequently. So we got inspired by that, and then we did a potato Berliner Weiss, which actually got...
How strong was the potato peach?
Well, it didn't actually have peaches.
No, I know, but I could call it.
That one was about...
The pee-pee.
So the original one from the barley wine. So basically, when we're sparging, so we're done sparging for the barley wine, we just chopped up a bunch of potatoes and threw them into the kettle, you know, with the hope that that chopping them up real nice would help kind of pull some of that starch out of it. And then we got about 3 gallons out of it, and we threw it in a little carboy. I can't remember what kind of souring bugs we added to it, but we just basically forgot about it for about a year and a half. And then just recently, we brewed a Berliner Weiss, and it wasn't quite as tart or complex as we wanted it to be before we bottled it. And I was like, you know what? We got that kind of potato sour stuff going on in the corner. And I was like, what happens if we combined it? So I took a little glass and I took, you know, a little wine thief. I combined them and I was like, this is awesome. I had Haley try it. She loved it. So we're like, you know what? Let's just add that in. It'll give it some nice acidity and it'll give it some a little more complexity from the souring yeast. I actually have a bottle of it right now.
Oh, wow. I did not know that when I brought that up.
So when you tasted this a year and a half potato beer, what were the kind of things that you tasted?
Oh, so it had a lot of the sourness. It was very tart, like almost unpalatable.
Like overly strong lemonade.
Okay. Yeah. So like a kind of like a clean lacto tartness, mm-hmm. not like an acetic vinegar.
But it had it had some funkiness to it.
Smells delicious.
You know, from the Brett. And so our goal was to just like make regular Berliner Weiss into a kind of a little more of a complex beer. So we call it a wild Berliner.
This is absolutely delicious.
Thank you.
I mean, incredible.
Thank you.
So that's a lesson is, you know, do a little extra sparging, throw some potatoes in.
Well, actually, we've got
carboy it up and let it hang out until you need it.
Yeah, it's just a way to get more beer. It's a way to have something on hand. As a home brewer, sometimes you want to blend. Sometimes you want to lower the pH. Sometimes you want to add more complexity. And it's a really great way to do that. So anytime we brew a real big beer,
mm-hmm.
we'll do that. And even if it's like 2 gallons, you know, reduced down to 1 gallon.
You mean you just boil it down to 1 gallon?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, like, for example, we did a few Belgians in a row, you know, so we could kind of repitch the yeast. And then we did the same thing. We oversparged and we got this extra beer. And we ended up with 5 gallons from the 2 subsequent batches. And then we were like, well, this is great. So we did that a few more times. And now we got about 15 gallons of just very low gravity.
So it's like a nice table beer.
It's like 1020, 1025. And we just kind of pitched, you know, some funky yeast in there, like we use the lambic blend.
That's the key, though, like you said. Otherwise, it's going to be real tannic and harsh.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So you do need to use souring yeast for it, but it always ends up, what we have right now, at least, is just kind of a pleasant, tart table beer.
Yeah.
Rather
and something
than
that we could blend
out.
With if we, you know, needed
right.
to.
Right, absolutely.
That makes this Berliner Weiss very accessible. Yeah. Like, is the potato beer just, it's wonderfully drinkable as well, just alone with it?
Well, the potato Berliner Weiss, the one that we actually brewed
separately
different
than this, right?
Yeah.
That's ready to drink. That's, you know, it actually advanced last year in NHC.
Yeah,
as
it went
well.
To Nationals. It didn't place, but.
But yeah, so that one, the potato Berliner came out very, you know, ready to go. But then when we used it as part of an experiment, it was really more suited for blending. It was a little harsh.
Yeah.
Speaking of competitions, you guys enter a lot, and you enter a lot at one time in any competition. What do you have any advice or any commentary on the experience?
I think keeping a nice inventory and having things around and not just drinking it and giving it away right away. Like, we have stuff on hand where at our brew night, we were able to do a 3-year tasting of our barley wine. You know, he's very good at keeping the notes and like cellaring it and keeping track of where the beer is going to go. Like,
yeah, any beer that I feel is ageable, you know, so basically anything that doesn't have like an excessive amount of hops in it with the exclusion of our barley wine, mm-hmm. I will set aside, like, we do a homebrew alley, which is 2 bottles, NHC, which is now 3 bottles in the first round, 3 bottles in the second round. So that's 8 beers, basically. So that's 8 beers that we'll set aside for 1 year. And then if I'm like, oh, it's like a Belgian strong or something, I'll set aside 16 or even like 24 and be like, okay, these are going to be our entries in that category for the next like 2 or 3 years. I think that's one of the keys to, you know, really having your entry rates a lot higher is just like cellaring
everything. Well, and saving the cider over the years. Actually, that's why I think it did so well at competition is because we did, you know, vintage it basically and keep it around when it was a little harsh when you judged it first off. We didn't just drink it all. We really saved it and hoped that it would mature and that the aging would advance it further the next year in the competition, which it did.
Yeah, absolutely.
So patience is truly a virtue with some of these beers and ciders.
And then some of the other things we do, like we don't really brew to style. We don't say like, oh, we want to like brew this kind of inside of the BJCP like style. Haley, when it comes to us writing recipes, it's really Haley's like the brainchild, and I'm kind of the
scientist.
Yeah.
So it's
we
like
say
she,
he's the technician. I have the ideas, and I'm like, this is. We write the recipe together, but then I fall short in how technical you are. Like,
yeah,
he's just so science minded that as he has every gadget. Mm-hmm. Really, like I can't even believe. I'm like, what is this? You know, and he's like, try this, that, that, like.
But her job is, you know, taste beers and no beers. And so she knows, like, everything that's out there. And she's tried them all. And so she comes up with the beer based on, like, what her kind of vision is for whatever that we're brewing. And I find that a lot of times our styles fall, like, outside or kind of in between categories. So what we'll do is just enter them in both. So, like, for example, like our triple... it's a nice hoppy triple, but it's kind of in between like the Belgian strong golden and the triple. So instead of just like entering it in one of the two, you enter it in both and you see
feedback.
How well does it.
Well, and it's just more feedback in general about the beer. It's more people judging it and tasting it and giving you notes.
Yeah.
Absolutely. With that, we're going to have to go, but what about being a member of HeritageRadioNetwork.org?
So HeritageRadioNetwork.org is a not-for-profit organization, and if you like this show and any of the other wonderful shows, we would invite you to support with your membership. Memberships start as low as $60, and if you're a homebrewer, you get 5% off at Bitter and Esters and Brooklyn Homebrew, as well as $1 off draft beers at Jimmy's Number 43. So we want to thank you for listening. We'll be back next week with Peter Salmon, Eric and Norlander. Oscar Norlander, when they're talking about their amazing sour beers.
Thank you, Haley Jensen and Stephen Derlich. Yep. Visit
them
at Taproom 307.
Yep.
See you next week on Ferment About It.
Hey.
Hey, over here with the Ferment About It.
Thanks for listening to this program on HeritageRadioNetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes Store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at Heritage_Radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@HeritageRadioNetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.